Hi, thanks for joining us. Back in 2009, I did two shows on the topic of the internet with two young people who were deep into it. One was on emerging social media, and the other was on the overall impact of the internet, which I called The Internet: Does the Good Outweigh the Bad? I thought it would be interesting to rerun those shows and see what's changed since then. I replayed the first show a while back. This week is the second one, so here goes. Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Now, several weeks ago, we did a show on social networking sites. And so it was kind of like looking over the landscape of those sites, and that would be like Twitter and MySpace and Friendster and things like that, and looking at LinkedIn, and, you know, all the different kind of social networking sites that have different purposes and seeing what they do and why people use them. But it was kind of definitional in nature, you know? So we're going to take a different twist on that today. And I've got the same, internet analysis crew back with me today to look at really overall at the internet, and does the good that it brings outweigh the bad that it brings into our lives and into society generally? So it's, you know, kind of taking on a weighty topic here in 28 and a half minutes. So we're going to talk real fast. But no, we're just going to try to cover the kinds of things that maybe people talk about or think about, but we're going to focus on, does the good outweigh the bad on the internet? So my guests are with me here in the studio, the young, lovely, and talented Suzanne Clements, who's, she raised her hand, that would be her.
Because you can all see that.
Yeah, there you go. So that's why I had to describe it. So she's a Melbourne-based artist and graphic designer and photographer and also an author. So I guess she's a sort of a Renaissance woman in the arts. And then also on the other end, in San Antonio, Texas, joining us on the phone is Peter Hughes, who's the host of Technology Bites, which is a radio show on geekradio.com, if I got that right. And he's a website developer in San Antonio with a company called Click to Try. The two is a numeral in the middle if you want to look that up. Suzanne and Peter, welcome back. So we're going to take on the show today in kind of a more opinionated way, which should be some fun, I think. So, you know, let's start off. I mean, let's kind of enumerate some of the ways in which the internet in general and social networking sites, you know, maybe in particular in the middle of that, are good. They do good things and allow good things to be done. I'll start with one. Obviously, it's a tremendous resource for information. I mean, I don't know how many times since, you know, I first was on the web in about 1995 or so, that you'd be having dinner with people, and at midnight on a Saturday night, it would come up like, okay, who was it who did that song, Downtown or whatever it is, and nobody could think of it because you're all too bombed to wake up a brain cell at that point. But you go to the internet, and, you know, and in 15 seconds you come back and go, well, who was it? Petula Clark or whatever, you know. Anyway, you come up with the answer, and so it's like having the whole Library of Congress at your fingertips. No matter how arcane the subject, it's right there, and you can find it in 30 seconds or less. So it's a huge resource for information, and obviously kids use it for educational purposes, both formal and informal, and it actually educates a lot of people in ways they would never be exposed to information. So that's one thing. All right, Suzanne, name something good the internet is for.
Well, it's another informational kind of thing, but if I'm working on a project and I need to find some information, like I've just hooked up with a couple of different tweets on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm now a member, by the way.
Okay, so a tweet is one of the little packets of message, a little individual messagette that comes through Twitter.
Yeah, and I've joined a couple of people's feeds on there, and they'll send out tips and tricks, things that I would have never even known to look for. So yeah, it's actually informing me. Here's a cool new feature of maybe the new Adobe Creative Suite or some coding widget that you can, you know, bust into your website and make it look awesome or do something super cool. So it comes in, and I'm not even necessarily thinking about it, but it gives me some inspiration for future work.
Yeah, so I would say, like, that leads to the kind of, that's an instance of the fact that it's really good for business,
mm-hmm,
okay, and for professional development generally, which is an extension of education, let's say, right?
Sure.
But it's like, it's a huge conduit for business, obviously, with ads and everything else and the ability to buy things online. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, in other states where you'd never have, you know, I mean, your dog eats your remote for your 10-year-old, you know, CD player or something, you can instantly find a replacement on eBay and get 3 days later, you've got it, and it only costs you $12 or something, you know. It's like a minor miracle. It never would have been possible before. So,
yep.
All right, Peter, what's another good thing that the internet does?
Another one that kind of comes out of the Twitter example, a big thing that I've seen is the development of communities that would never have come together. Like
yeah,
you mentioned, you know, getting a remote from three states over for your 12-year-old TV. The other thing is people with interests that it would be difficult to perhaps find someone else with that particular set of interests, mm-hmm, in your, you know, neighborhood or within the area that you normally act and move.
That's right.
But on the internet, you can have a worldwide community of people with a particular interest. Early on the internet, for my example, I knew I wanted to do websites, and this was in the very early days. This was when the Mosaic browser was a beta. You know, the first web browsers were just out.
Yeah.
And how to build a web page. There were no books. Nobody really, there were no instruction manuals, but there was a community of people. And what would happen is when one person figured something out, they would say, hey, I figured out how to do this, post it, and then the other people who were participating in that community would learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say, to broaden that seems to be my role here. So I'm the broadener. you said it just right, but it shrinks the world, right? It brings people together, and it's really, I don't know, Marshall McLuhan, right? 1971. Wrote a book called The Global Village, and the medium is the message. It was his little tagline or bumper sticker from that, and he was really right. He was a communications professor, I think, at a university, maybe McGill University in Montreal, and he wrote a book about how in the future communication media and information technologies would bring the whole world closer and closer together, and absolutely has happened. I mean, you can be playing Scrabble online with somebody, and at some point you might say to them, where are you from? And they'll say, Melbourne, Australia or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. where they are. I mean, maybe there's a language barrier. That's the only possible barrier. But it's unbelievable that the person in Melbourne, Australia can be just exactly like the person who used to have to sit across a little table from you playing Scrabble,
Interestingly, too, though, the language barrier isn't even that much of an issue because of Babelfish. Like, I've been communicating back and forth with a musician over there in Poland, and I was going to buy one of her paintings and all that. She does everything. So we would communicate back and forth by typing in what we wanted to say to each other, filter it through Babelfish, and send it over too. So, I mean, language barriers are being broken down a lot as well. Not that Babelfish is perfect, but
is that a free gist. Is that a free service?
Yep.
Wow.
So Google
okay.
it.
Because I'm aware of yeah right. I was aware of things that they'll do like a sentence or a paragraph or something for free, but it's pretty limited that way. But you're talking about something that. Kind of does it. You type in your language.
And then you tell it what language to translate to.
Mm-hmm. And it comes out on the other person's screen in their language.
No,
right?
it populates a little box below, okay. And then you would put that in whatever you're sending over.
Okay, so it works kind of
on Babelfish, you can also put in the URL for a website, and it will call up that web page translated into your language.
Wow.
See, I didn't even know that.
There you go. Now you're off and running again. So... overall, the internet has given a new dimension to human interaction, certainly in the area of communication and information. It's added a completely new dimension that wasn't there, let's say, 25 years ago. And I have to say, I'm in some ways I'm sort of behind in some technologies, but in some ways I'm an early adopter. I had my first email address was clewis@bitnet, and that was it. And so I was on Bitnet, which was at the time something sponsored by the National Science Foundation. And it was only accessible to people who were university grantees, who had grants and work they were doing, projects they were being funded by the National Science Foundation. So I was, at the time, the only C. Lewis, and there were like 2,500 people. This was 1984, I think. There were 2,500 people who had an email address in the United States that was non-military, okay? And so, at the time, that was a miracle. I had this little, the modem was about the size of, a book. But now there's so many things I'm not even aware of. For example, I've never used Twitter and don't want to. Look at the recent presidential election. Obama won in large part, I think, because they completely maxed out the capacity of the internet to provide input to a presidential campaign in terms of grassroots funding and enthusiasm of large bases of people and everything. And they did that brilliantly. And none of the other campaigns had any remote handle on that. And so it allowed them to raise more money and spend more money that had ever been spent by a long shot in a presidential campaign without ever even using the federal funds that are available to campaigns, right? So that's a really good example of how the internet has changed the world in fundamental ways, right? So I don't know. All the things like paying bills and, the post office is now basically you just get junk mail. You don't really use the post office for a whole lot of things. I do still get bills because I'm old tech in some ways. But but anybody think of any other kind of ways in which the internet and social networking sites are good that we haven't covered?
Oh, sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Hooking up with old friends. We kind of talked about it a little bit in the first episode, but people you haven't been able to keep in touch with over the years, maybe from school or from an old job, and there you are on LinkedIn or Facebook, and you're able to reconnect again.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like a new medium for communication that empowers your ability to reach out to people in ways that would have been impossible before.
And even with that in mind, too, like, there are some people, if you leave a job or you go to another state or another country, you might lose complete touch with these people.
Yeah.
And now you're able to talk to them every day. Like, I have Instant Messenger on my computer, and every day I talk to some old coworkers, and they're nowhere near here.
I mean, like, when I first went to college, I don't even tell you what year, but, you know, it was shortly after the demise of the dinosaurs. And the... And to make a long-distance call from the other part of the country that I was in to my home, to my parents, I think it was 85 cents a minute to make a long-distance call, you know? And so we would, like, prearrange by letter when I would call, which would be, like, 3:30 on Sunday afternoon. And I would hook up, and we would talk very quickly and convey any essential information that needed to be said very quickly and efficiently. And it was like, because, you know, it cost you, like, $10 to make, you know, any kind of conversation at all. And that was at a time when $10 is more like $80 now, you know. So, I mean, it was extremely expensive. So the idea of communicating was so restricted and truncated then, and now it's just ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of gets you into the how is the internet bad? Because sometimes you can take a good thing to extreme excess, and it becomes extremely bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so let's talk about some of the ways in which the internet and social networking sites and all of the ramifications of the internet are bad. Peter, you start.
Well, to take the community example,
yeah,
it's one thing when you can find a community of Scrabble enthusiasts
right.
and hook up with them around the world, but what about people with an interest that's negative?
Mm-hmm.
There were studies of communities with negative behaviors.
Yeah.
For instance, everyone knows about, like, you know, the teenage girls who like to cut themselves.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
Or the people, the anorexics,
mm-hmm.
that's been in the news,
yeah.
where they get together in groups. And what happens is, of course, since they can be in a community on the internet,
yeah.
then that's the norm. Then that's a group of people where this is the normal behavior. This is not outside of the mainstream for them.
Exactly.
And it reinforces that behavior, and they get more information about, by their definition, better ways
yeah.
to do the negative thing that all the rest of us are
yeah.
Aghast at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's like 20, 30 years ago, the one person in town who would have had some weird behavior, you know, whether it was like a fascination with child pornography or whatever it is, first would have had no access to it, and then secondly would have had no ability to communicate with anybody else, like you just said, who had that same bizarre or destructive or evil interest. And now there's a whole community of them, and they can huddle over in some little corner that's hard to find unless you're in that community. And, gosh, you know, it gives them a sense of empowerment and validity for that activity that does just what you just described, Peter. You know, so it's like it allows evil people to congregate with each other and form a global village of people who are into destructive behaviors, whether it's destructive to themselves or destructive to victims, you know, that they can find more easily on the internet too, you know. So it's that too. It gives pedophiles, for example, obviously we all know this, access to kids who are on, you know, MySpace or Facebook, and allows them to pose as someone else, you know. So
mm-hmm.
it's like that form of congregation of people is dangerous. And so it's the flip side of the good part. And I think all of the bad aspects of the internet that we can talk about, you know, the good aspects all have a flip side, the underbelly of it that's a bad aspect.
Sure.
And so it's a case of, like, is the bad worse than the good, right? So that's what we're doing here. Does the good outweigh the bad? And you're listening to American Variety with your host, Court Lewis. We're ranting about the internet and whether the good outweighs the bad. You know, so I'm sounding like the parent here, you know.
Just a little.
Hey, you know, it's my only chance. But, so, I mean, there's a story, you know, kind of the big story this week, and is the Craigslist killer, you
mm-hmm.
know. So the guy who was basically stalking gals who, whether they were just massage therapists or were offering other more spicy services, and I suspect that's the case. You know, so you can, people will find victims on the internet and basically stalk them and isolate them and do damage to them or kill them in this case, which would have been, you know, it's possible to do before. I imagine that people,
mm-hmm.
you know, massage therapists who were actually hookers in the past occasionally would run into a guy who would beat him up or kill him, you know, before the internet. But it facilitates it, right? Makes it easier to do. You can target things more efficiently, you know, so.
Well, it Craigslist essentially costs you nothing. It's analogous. I mean, Craigslist is classified advertising, which has been around for 100 years. But before, you had to pay for the ad. You know, somebody had to go into the newspaper and pay, and, you know, where there was something more traceable.
And you had to look somebody in the eye and say, I want to post this ad. And they would look back at you and go, yeah? You know, I mean, it was like there was a social communication there that involved values. Mm-hmm. But on the internet, it's devoid of values, really, a lot, isn't it? I mean, would you say that? In the Craigslist, for example, posting something under the, I've never even looked at the thing, right? But I was reading about it. Posting something under the erotic services section of Craigslist is not something that involves any kind of social opprobrium, right? You know?
Right. Well, clearly the fact that they have an erotic services section to it, no newspaper I've ever heard of had a classified section called that. Because no one would walk in. There would be no business for that. Because that's no one would walk in there and say, yes, I want to write a check for erotic services. Post this in your paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's
and
true.
So it clearly it reduces the, I don't know, I guess sort of personal risk of exposure to individuals who want to participate in that.
Yeah, there are social barriers that you encounter in dealing with real people on transactions, and the internet really eliminates those social barriers to a great extent. And I was going to say, like, that's one big factor in the bad side of the internet is that it allows everything to be anonymous, or even worse, it allows you to pose as something you're not, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can hide behind a mask, or you can hide entirely, you know, and you can engage in behaviors that you would never have done in public, even if you could find a venue for behaving that way in public, because you're just sitting in a chair in your desk in your den doing it. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so that's
if I would put it as a minor bad, you know, it's not on the caliber of, you know, someone plotting murders like the Craigslist killer. But, you know, just the tone of people where if you were sitting across the table from someone with a different opinion than you about a movie or politics or whatever, it would not be nearly as, I think, personal and vitriolic as you can see in any kind of discussion thread. The types of things that are said about people that are just so far beyond what would normally be acceptable. So clearly the person didn't feel any limit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I think it reduces the barriers in many ways. And one barrier is kind of, let's call it courteous or respectful social communication. That's out the window, you know. And you read blogs. I mean, we've all done that. You read a blog on some topic where some celebrity has done something, and there are people who are absolutely saying the most, as you say, vitriolic, ugly things, you know. And or even if it's not a famous person, if it's just somebody who posted some opinion, and they're being just ripped totally apart in the most obscene way.
You know?
And so that's a form of evil, you know. Maybe, like you said, Peter, it's like a lesser evil, but it corrodes social adhesion or communication, or, you know, it corrodes the, you know, somehow the social fabric. And, you know, there again, I sound like some highfalutin guy, but
also,
heck, that's true, it does.
But it's not like those people, when they log off, necessarily retain that when they go out to school or to work or to hang out with their friends. I mean, I think it probably gets into the daily dialogue between the friends, what happened online, let's talk about that. But I don't think that sort of adapted personality necessarily leaves the internet with them.
So do you think it's totally compartmentalized that you behave, you know, an 18-year-old kid behaves one way on the internet and then turns off the computer and goes out and then behaves in the normal way that he would have behaved if he had not engaged in that kind of corrosive, ugly, obscene behavior? You think it's totally compartmentalized?
No, but I believe that a good portion of that gets kind of shut down when you're out in public, because you do have people watching you, and, you know, you're much more aware of the opinions of those around you. You can see their facial expressions. You can, you know, hear their response, you know, so.
You can risk them physically attacking you in certain circumstances.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the mealy-mouthed teenager who can, you know, slam whatever movie in the most horrible terms is not going to speak quite that way when they're at their high school.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of the prospect of direct, you know, physical results of whatever they said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I still think that just doing that some part of the time, and some people, you know, particularly younger people, spend, you know, a huge percentage of their waking hours, right, on the internet. I think that affects their overall view of the world and the way they interact with people, even if it gets to where, like, behaving in a civilized way begins to seem almost a form of enforced play acting, you know, maybe a little bit. I mean, I'm exaggerating that, but I think in some cases it's probably like that, you know. I don't know. So So we've been talking about ways here in American Variety that the internet is good and bad, and we kind of ran through, you know, a lot of good things, and now we're talking about some bad things that in many ways are kind of the flip side of the good things, like the idea of establishing communities of people with common interest is a good thing in many ways. If you're interested in, you know, the arcana of baking baguettes, you know, or something, you don't have to live in Paris to do it. You can, you know, communicate with people all around the world who know how to do that real well or are interested in that. But on the other hand, if you're also interested in, you know, pedophilia, or, you know, if you're interested in shooting up your school or whatever, you can find communities of people who have that, who share that same negative and destructive impulse, and it normalizes it for them. So there's like, the whole thing can be addictive too. I mean, even I find myself to some extent checking email more often than I need to, or, you know, I've got the little annunciator on that dings when I get an email. And even if I'm concentrating on something, you know, writing something or doing, you know, designing something in my work, I'll go check the email, and I don't need to, you know.
I've been Pavlov that way.
Yeah,
but it's I'll be in like, the living room, and I'll hear it halfway across the house. Oh, I gotta go see who
I know,
wrote me.
Right, you know. So it's kind of like when the phone rings, you go answer it, and it's weird if you're in the house, and you know, you and your wife or your partner are just too tired to answer the phone. It's weird to sit there and let the phone ring, and kind of agree in advance you're not going to answer the phone. You feel guilty, you know. You feel like you're hiding or something. And it kind of is the same way with email a little bit. The same thing extends over. You feel a compulsion to go answer it or look at it or whatever. Do you, Peter?
Oh, certainly. And the other thing that happens is, as a distraction, is I've certainly had the experience of where you go to check that email, and then the next thing you do is you look up a little. You know, you're doing a little reading online, and the next thing you know,
half an hour's
gone.
You stayed
up a lot later than you intended.
That's
and
right.
So you're basically trading internet time for sleep.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not good.
Or for, you know, time with your kids or whatever it might be, you know. But yeah, often for sleep. You're right. So, you know, and it does certainly allow other kinds of addictive behavior online, like gambling. You know,
mm-hmm.
Used to be that if you lived in, you know, Oshkosh, Bagosh, or whatever, you might have to drive 100 miles to go to the nearest casino. And before a certain period in time, that even that wasn't possible, you know. So, but now you can just log on, and you've got this account there, and it's all so sort of neutral and nice seeming, and you're not really forking over $20 bills to anybody, you know. And
yeah, you don't even have that physical stack of chips to kind of know whether you're up or down.
Yeah, you're playing a game, and they set it up. I've really never even looked at those sites. You know, I sound like I'm innocent, but in some respects, I've deliberately tried to stay innocent from this stuff because you can get sucked into it, right? And I like to play blackjack. You know, I go out in casino boats a few times, and it's, you know, it's fun, and I could get addictive, you know, especially if you won a little bit, you know. And so people who go to Las Vegas, you know, can come back several thousand dollars in the hole, but people who do that every night online can end up a mortgage in the hole, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And that happens a lot. It just really facilitates addictive behaviors like that can be done online.
Well, and shopping then is another one, because your email is constant. Like, I know mine is. I get like maybe 10
Absolutely.
Invitations to sales and special events every day.
Everything's on sale online.
Yeah, yeah. And
true.
They're constantly bombarding you. So if you're even the least bit weak, you see something, you're like, oh, that'd be great. I better buy that. And then you send it on to your friend. You should buy this too. And it's just...
And, of course, because of the nature of tracking cookies and everything else, they know where you've gone. Or certainly if you've bought something from that organization once, then they've got you, you know.
And then they can
then they
send
pass
it on.
You, they metastasize you out to every other, you know, online catalog that's similar or whatever if they decide to sell you. So you get stuff that they know is entrancing to you because you've bought things just like it before.
To know? Be fair, though, I think that the only people who are contacting me are people I've actually signed up for. So I'm asking for the trouble.
There you go.
You know, the other thing is those people with the money scams over in Africa and Europe
oh, yeah.
and everything where
yeah,
they tell you they're going to cut you a big check. And if you could just, you know, and I've also won the lottery a lot.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Especially in Europe when you just bought a ticket.
I know. I mean, man, they are so generous over there.
I don't even know why you're here talking to me. My gosh, you should just be out. You should own your own island, you know. Amazing. Well, that's the other thing is spam, right? That's a whole other form of evil in and of itself. It's a minor form of evil, but it's a whole ramped up different level from junk mail, right? Which you just glance at and you toss. But, you know, spam clogs up your inbox. You got to deal with it one way or another. You got to delete it anyway. And you know, we like, you know, if you're smart at all, you can recognize all of it for what it is. And you never even really open anything or respond to it at all. But it's there. And a lot of people do get sucked into it. And earlier in the email era, a lot of people got hooked on that stuff when they were mm-hmm. innocent about it, you know. So there's spam. It's more like an annoyance than an evil, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Although as somebody who has their own server, runs their own email stuff and deals with that in the business environment, the fact that spam makes up some kind of massive percentage I've read different studies, but some of them say 90% or more of the email traffic on the internet is spam.
I know it.
Then in a sense, they're stealing, you know, they're stealing capacity on the system from legitimate uses, legal and positive uses. And so, you know, as a person with a server, when it fills up with spam, I guess I resent that, and I would maybe gauge it as more evil than just when your inbox is full of
stuff.
To
you, it's more pernicious than just an irritation. You know, we've got just a minute or so left. Gosh, I wish we had another half hour because we could easily milk this thing forever here. But, I mean, to me, it's like a huge drain on productivity. You know, I have a company, but I just have subcontractors. But if I had 50 employees, they'd be all like, you know, surfing the web and doing email and, you know, flipping back and forth and minimizing stuff as soon as somebody walked by. You know, it's such a drain.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it is a huge, nationally and internationally, an enormous drain on productivity. Would we all agree that that's a true statement?
It certainly can happen.
Can happen?
It doesn't necessarily happen to everybody every day all the time.
Well, there you go. That's
but you can get
that's
stuck
a true
in
statement.
It. Yeah.
I'm sure it happens all the time somewhere to some extent. It's, you know, in any good-sized company, it's happening.
It's always happening somewhere.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, and another thing we haven't even really talked about is how people's personal information mm-hmm. gets out of control, identity theft and all of that. I mean, you know, and then, you know, you post, you send somebody a photo and then 2 years later, suddenly it's on the internet and there you are with your, you know,
college
with your top down or, you know, there you are drunk on Panama Beach and you're in Girls Gone Wild or whatever, you know. So.
What are you trying to say?
Suzanne never did that.
No.
She just turned red. I don't know, Suzanne. Anyway,
yeah, thanks.
Now we got to search Suzanne. Never mind.
Yeah, you're not going to find it.
But, you know, the worst case of that is like, you know, somebody like Paris Hilton with their sex video. Of course, they then, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, so that turns into a good thing for them. But anyway, so, you know, here we are. We're at the end of the show, and really we have to kind of shut it off, and it's a shame because it would like, you know, there are many more bad things we could talk about overall. All right, let's have a quick vote.
Nice.
Let's have a quick vote. I think overall, to me, having lived most of my life before the internet, I think that the bad outweighs the good to me, even though the good is fantastic. Overall, I think in terms of accelerating the downward ski run of our society, you know, we're having the fall of Rome in a triple time here. You know, I think it's the bad outweighs the good. What do you think, Suzanne?
I think it's the bee's knees, but I don't have kids.
What does that mean? Is that a Canadian expression?
Oh, I don't think so.
All right, wrap it up. What do you think?
No, I think it's great, and I couldn't go a week without it. I absolutely rely on it.
You think the good outweighs the bad?
I do, but I think you have to know what you're doing.
Okay, well, I don't mean for you personally, but I'm society-wide here, so okay.
Yeah, but I think I don't have children. I don't have anything like that, but for me, it's critical, and I think it's important for a lot of people.
All right, Peter, the world awaits your vote.
I think it's good. I think that at the heart of it, it comes down to that people are going to have to be self-policing more.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's what it really comes down to is how it's a tool
and whether that's going to happen.
People use it.
Whether that's going to happen is anybody's guess, and I could guess, but I won't. So, hey, we got to wrap it up,
so I
guys.
I guess we need to do the humanity bad or good episode, right?
There you go. That would take 3 hours. We have to do a serialized. We'll have to do an episodic thing there. Hey, guys, thank you very much, Peter Hughes and Suzanne Clements, for being on with us here to bash the internet and talk about, you know, how good and bad it is. And thanks to you all for listening to American Variety. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.